Good to be with you on this beautiful Lord's Day. If you have a Bible and you'd like to follow along, please turn open to Ephesians chapter 6. We'll be reading there in just a moment. Ephesians chapter 6. The elders asked me to keep it short, and I said, yeah, that's fine. 45 minutes is fine. Now, I'm not long-winded to begin with. So I only need about 15 minutes of your time, then we'll turn it over to one of our shepherds. I want to welcome all of our visitors to the Monte Vista Church of Christ and invite you back anytime that you have the opportunity. We're going to be worshiping again tonight at 6. If you're interested in coming, we want you to know that we care about you deeply. You're going to hear me say this from time to time, and I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that I mean it in every way possible. If you are interested in a home Bible study, one-on-one, email correspondence, so on and so forth, please let us know. I'm free all my evenings with the exception of Sunday and Wednesday evening. And I wouldn't rather do anything but study the Bible with you. My favorite TV shows, I've got the DVR, so I can watch those whenever I have free time. But I mean that. If you're searching for the truth or you're hung up on something, I may not have the answers, but I know that we can get into the book and we can find them out. There's a story, probably a fake one, but there's a story about a father watching his son struggle with a rock in the backyard of their home. He was watching from one of their windows, and his son was trying to move this rock across the yard, really, really big for his size anyway. He was trying to move it with his arms. He got down on the ground, was kicking it, trying to move it that way. He finally wrapped a rope around it, was trying to pull it with a rope, and he couldn't make the rock hardly budge. And it was kind of humorous to his father, and he went outside and he said, "Son, use all your strength. Give it all you've got." And his son was a little flustered by that because he had been. And he told his dad, "I am using all the strength that I've got." And he said, "No, you're not. You haven't asked me to help you yet." We live it in a do-it-yourself society. If you watch any commercials about Lowe's and Home Depot, those kind of businesses are built off do-it-yourselfers. And that's fine when it comes to yard work or self-improvement or whatever. But when it comes to spiritual matters, I think that we've let this do-it-yourself type of mentality creep in. And if we're not careful, if all we do is focus on what we can do, our strength, me, myself, and I, and we try to tackle life's biggest problems with our own strength, we're going to end up being a failure with disappointment. And this is what brought me to Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10. "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of your might." I read that wrong, and I read it wrong on purpose. It does not say at the end of the verse, "Stand in the strength of your might." And I understand that there's passages that talk about you being strong, me being strong. And we're not going to ignore those things, but this particular passage says you stand strong in His might, in God's might. So, just like the story there where the father wanted his son to use him for help, there are things that God has placed in our path that we might depend on, that we might use as motivation to use His might, to use His strength to get through all the trials and temptations that we might be going through. And the one that we're going to be talking about this morning is hope. And so the slide says, anchor down in hope. By the way, we're going to need to add Vera to the family talk list because she's teaching me PowerPoint. So maybe a prayer for patience on her behalf. Hang in there with me, honey. I'm bent on learning this thing. So, but we're coming along. So hope. Hope is used in a couple of different ways in the Scripture. We're going to be talking about the two meanings. One of them is predominantly used, and the other one is very, very lightly used. But speaking of hope, 1 Corinthians 13 is probably one of the more popular passages that include hope. Now, these three things remain: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of those is love. But if we were to do a survey of everybody in the audience and we were to ask, which of those things do we focus the least on? Do we focus least on faith, least on hope, or least on love? And I'm not saying that there should be a priority list, but I think most of us would agree that we talk more about faith and we talk more about love than we do hope. The Scripture does say that the greatest of those is love. But as you'll see from the lesson this morning, there is a great deal of motivation to be gained from thinking about the hope that God has placed before us. What a blessing it is. So the first meaning of hope that the Scripture uses is like a synonym for wishing. You know, I said this as a little kid many times. I wished to be a basketball player when I grew up. That didn't even come close to happening. It's the idea of maybe not. You know, there's a possibility of it might not happening. But when you use this type of definition, there is a sense of doubt that this might come to pass, but maybe there's a little hint of doubt. The scripture uses it in these two passages, in Luke 23 and verse 8, where it says that Jesus was brought before Herod, and Herod was hoping to see a sign from Jesus. He wished that might happen. Maybe Jesus would, maybe Jesus wouldn't. He was hoping for that. And then in Romans chapter 15 and verse 24, Paul says, I hope to see you on my way to Spain. Possibly, I hope for that, you know. But it really wasn't something sure and something steadfast. And that's what our scripture reading was indicating there in Hebrews chapter 6. And that's the second definition that is more prominently used. It breeds a sense of expectation. I fully expect it to happen. Not a maybe not. It's something that I expect. And it breeds confidence. And if it's something positive, it certainly breeds an excitement there. The two words that were used in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, called it something sure and something steadfast. Turn over with me to Hebrews chapter 6 again. Thank you, Kevin, for doing the scripture reading. Hebrews chapter 6, and look at verse 18 and 19. And I know that we're jumping into the context here, but I really just want to focus in on the idea of hope from verse 19. But we'll read verse 18. So that by two unchangeable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled for refuge might have strong encouragement, and now note, to hold fast to the hope that is set before us. Holding fast, kind of an old school term. If you might put it in modern day language, you know, hold on for dear life. Hold on for dear life to hope. Now, if the scripture was saying, hold on to dear life, for dear life, for a wish, on a wish, would that be very encouraging? Hold on to dear life for a maybe not. No. And look at verse 19. We have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become the high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Something sure and something steadfast. It's something that we fully expect to happen, and it should breed confidence. Let's talk about this idea of anchoring. It's probably not the best analogy for people who live in a desert, but most of us know what an anchor does. You put down an anchor when you know that there's going to be high winds, or if you're just storing the boat for a while, you're going to anchor it down, you're going to tie it to something, so that when the wind comes, the wind doesn't take away that boat and destroy the boat. Now, if the anchor in the analogy is hope, and we're in the boat, or we're the boat, I want you to think about what the storms might be. The anchor is hope. We're in the boat. What is it that's going to cause us to go away from that and to be destroyed? Paul talked about in 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 19 about making shipwreck of the faith. And I was amazed at how many times the Bible talks about storms representing something very bad happening. Many times in the Old Testament, God would send a storm and specifically tell them through the prophets, this represents a spiritual problem of yours. But we'll leave those for a different time. The most popular one that we know of is the little kid song. You know, the rains came down, the floods came up. And there was two men who built their houses on two different types of soil or two different types of ground. One built it on sand, one built it on the rock. But the one who built it on something that was sure and something steadfast, when the storm came, when spiritual problems happened, or life in general happened, who was sure? Who was steadfast? Well, the man who built his house on the rock. And the Bible is going to present to us two different types of storms, specifically where it tells us exactly what the winds are. Here's one of them. The storm of false teaching. The storm of false teaching. Listen to this passage. Tossed to and fro by the waves, carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning and craftiness in deceitful schemes. You know what waves do? Waves do whatever the weather tells them to do. If the waves are in a storm, the waves are going to be real rough. If it's in real calm weather, the waves are going to be fairly mild. so on and so forth. The waves do whatever their surroundings do. And there's a lot of this amongst Christians. You know, if we're around worldly people, we become worldly. If we're around godly people, we become godly. But God doesn't want us to be like that. God doesn't want our circumstances to dictate our faith. He wants us to be sure and steadfast. And what we need is an anchor. Now, you might ask, well, what does hope have anything to do with false teaching? Well, if you had that expectation that God was going to give you glory and that you could spend eternity with Him in His presence, yeah, that would give me some sort of motivation to stay away from craftiness, a motivation to stay away from the schemers and those things that are false. Here's another storm that is presented in the Bible, the storm of being unwise, maybe more specifically, the storm of doubting. James chapter 1, verses 5 and 6 talks about, if any one of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all men generously and without reproach. But now note this, let him ask in faith without any doubting, for the one who doubts, what is he compared to? The surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. Again, waves are not good things, or spiritually. Waves are always bad things, because they do whatever their surroundings tell us to do. So if you're in this storm of life, and by the way, you can make your storm whatever it is. You know, the storm of a job not being what it should be, what you thought it was going to be, you lost a job, ultrasound didn't come out the way you wanted it to come out, the x-ray didn't come out as positively as you wanted it to, the congregational problems that exist, you might be around ungodly people, any number of storms. But if you're in a storm that causes you to tempt to be doubting, and if you're one of those people whose circumstances dictate who you are, you're going to be driven and tossed by that wind. And what we need in a storm is we need an anchor. An anchor will cause us to stick with God, to stick with what He says, rather than what men say, rather than what the doubters say. Lastly, Jesus led a hard life, to say the least. And He died a hard death. And He experienced many storms, some of which are much more serious than what we experience, some of them very, very similar. But He was around false teaching all the time. And He was around people who doubted all the time. And many of His family members, we're going to look at Mark chapter 3, where His family members thought he was crazy, that He was a wacko. He led a very hard life. And I think about it a lot, about the motivation that Jesus had to stay the course. And the Bible tells us about what Jesus focused on to kind of weather these storms. Listen to what the Scripture says. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before Him, think of that as hope, for the joy set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. You know how Jesus could be around all of those storms in life and live a hard life and die a hard death? He had that hope of glory before Him. For the joy set before Jesus, He can endure all of the unbelief around Him. For the joy set before Jesus, He can endure all of the ignorance and the doubting around Him. For the joy set before Jesus, He can endure the ridicule. The ridicule from the Jews, the ridicule from the Romans, the ridicule from the passers-by. For the joy set before Jesus, He can endure the smacks and the punches and the slaps and the thorns and the blindfolds. For the joy set before Jesus, He could put a tree on His back and mount and walk up the hill. I know He had help from Simon of Cyrene and the whips. And He could endure 6 hours hanging there like a piece of meat. For the joy set before Him, endured the darkness and loneliness of the cross. And then for the joy set before Him, He could have His body placed in the belly of the earth for 3 days. Because all of that happened on Friday. But Sunday was coming. Sunday was coming. And I don't just mean the first day of the week. I mean the joy, the resurrection, where He would appear alive and walk the earth for another 40 days. And as the latter part of Hebrews chapter 12 talks about, verse 2, He would ascend to the right hand of the throne of God, and there He sits. Brethren,
If you want motivation to weather life's storms and anchor down, use the same thing that Jesus used. Hope. Now, maybe you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, I am a wave. I am the surf of the sea. I get driven and tossed here and there. I get discouraged. I get this and that. Well, we want you to come on home. We want you to turn it around. And we want you to anchor down in hope of what God has promised us all. If we'll turn to Jesus and live a life in the obedience of faith. If you're not a Christian, we have a baptistry right behind me. Jesus has asked you to believe in Him and to live a life of faith and to turn away from sin, confessing His great name before men, and to be baptized in His name for the forgiveness of those sins. But that's just the start. That's just the start of the life of hope. If you're subject to the gospel call, we bid you to come. As together we